The footage of Triple M.
It's never been bigger.
Oh, big atmosphere.
More massive moments.
What about that?
Every massive match.
The energy, the electricity is building.
Massive!
For McDonald's.
Triple M rocks footy.
And welcome to the MCG for the traditional season opener between Richmond and Carlton. And the world is in the grip of this horrible virus, but thankfully we have our great game on show tonight here at the home of football. We're all in it together, and the team at Triple M Footy tonight privileged to be here in this situation. Empty stands, the players out on the ground. They're going through a few training drills at the moment with both sides. And as always, Barry Denner with you. That's the least most important thing you'll hear all night, because I'm surrounded by a team of superstars, as always. This man will just guide us through tonight, because that's what he does. He's a two-time All-Australian, and of course he's, the superstar of the media at the moment. Nathan Brown, a good evening to you. An interesting one we're in for tonight.
Excited to be here, Baz. There's no crowd, obviously, but just looking forward to seeing how this one unfolds. You always want to be part of history. This is the first time we've had a game with no supporters here. So looking forward to seeing how it unfolds.
Two-time All-Australian, 287 for the Saints. And he's a star of Triple M Footy. Joey Montagna, welcome back to the footy.
Yeah, thank you, Baz. Good to be back. And you mentioned the word there, privileged, and I feel privileged to be here tonight because it is historic and there are 90,000 people that would love to be here as well. So glad to be here and really looking forward to this one.
This man, an All-Australian as well, a Collingwood Premiership superstar. He signed up to Triple M Footy. Not too sure he realised he was going to be signing up to this, but Daisy Thomas, a good evening to you.
Yes, Baz, thanks for having me. Exciting night. Slightly different to me driving in tonight and being on this side of the fence, but looking forward to it nonetheless, and looking forward to seeing what some of my old teammates may dish up tonight.
One of the things you picked up early, Daisy, we're just looking out there, when the ball goes out of bounds or when there's a goal kicked, who is going to be getting the ball back?
It's going to be an interesting one and one to keep an eye on. We saw throughout the cricket, the one-day international, sixes hit and the fielders having to go over. And so who goes and gets it? Is it a player? Is it the umpire?
It's first world problems at the moment.
It is, Brandy. No. So would the boundary umpire jump the fence or would a player jump the fence?
I would have thought the AFL have some sort of lackeys getting the ball back out of the stand. I couldn't imagine the boundary umpire, who does an enormous amount of kilometres, is going to be going into the stand. Occupational health and safety everywhere there, Joey.
Absolutely. And a bit wet too. A bit greasy, Baz. So players want to be careful if they do have to jump the fence to get the footy. But it's just one of a million issues that we're going to have to work through this tonight and this season.
They might have been lackeys a little while ago. They're very important people now. Yeah.
How do you feel, Daisy? This is your first year out of football. This is the side you played for last year. Obviously, Collingwood Premiership player as well. You see all these players down here. You still look fit as a fiddle. I mean, you're probably better than 10 or 12 of them still out there. And that's what you told me before anyway. But how do you feel seeing the boys run out for the first time?
To be honest with you, mate, I think the one thing that I said I would miss and thought I would miss was walking up the race to the big crowd, the roar as you walk up the race. That's sort of what I always loved and what I really played for, that first 5 minutes of a big game. To have it here tonight in front of no one, I'm not sure I'm going to miss it that much, to be completely honest. I'm really interested to see how the boys go about it. The fact I could still be playing later on in this year, boy, oh boy, wowee. So I better be careful what I say, but to be honest, no, I'm pretty much at peace with the fact I'm sitting on this side of the fence.
For Coates Hire, this is a Triple M Footy preview. Whatever you need, Coates Hire can make it happen. Search Coates Hire today. Before we get all our experts' thoughts about actually being here tonight and the game being on, let's have a bit of a listen to some of the things that Gil McLachlan said last night at his press conference.
I said on Monday that we're moving to a 17-round season. I also said we had to be agile. Tonight, our 17-round season becomes a 153-game journey. We start tomorrow night with Richmond against Carlton at the MCG. Again, we have to be agile and flexible. The games will be shortened and quarters will now be 16 minutes plus time on. The NAB AFL Women's will continue this weekend. However, we will forego the final two weeks of the home and away season and move straight to finals with the fixture to be announced tomorrow. We know at any time a player may test positive and halt our journey temporarily. We know that we're building resilience measures in our clubs and our squads so that over the next couple of weeks we are better prepared to deal with a positive test of one or multiple players. We also embark on this journey with clear instruction from the government that all industry and all parts of society need to keep moving forward and we simply cannot stand still. We don't know how many games we will get into this 153-game journey before we have to pause. But what I do know today is I feel comfortable with the government and medical advice and the support of our presidents, CEOs, our players and our coaches. Tonight, our industry is unified in making a decision to start. The reality is this season will not look like any other.
It's unprecedented what's going on at the moment, not only in football, but around the world with every business, with every family. And I think the AFL have thought long and hard about that. And I reckon Gil McLachlan, you could see he's had some sleepless nights about it. But I thought he did an amazing job and made the right decision. One of the biggest talking points, Joey, was the 17-game seasons, because they talk about maybe this season's going to go into November, maybe even December. So when you look at that, people are going, well, why is it only a 17-game season and why are we playing 16-minute quarters?
Yeah, I think the 17-game season is just to give the competition a bit of breathing space and say, right, that's locked in and now we'll just try and make it best fit depending on what happens throughout this year. The interesting line that I've picked up on that's been a bit of a theme in the last couple of days, it's a 153-game season. So they've steered away from necessarily saying 17 rounds, because I've got a feeling once we get to rounds 3, 4, 5, 6 and they start cramming games in, it might not be a round. There might not be 9 games in 4. It might be St Kilda might play 2 games in 10 days and Collingwood might play 1 game in...
Right.
It might actually be a fluid competition. So I think this 153-game season, the language coming out of it, will mean that it won't be just playing on the weekends and then the next weekend and it's around. It could be flexible. This year, more than any other, players and clubs and officials are going to have to be open-minded. They're going to have to be flexible. They're going to have to be mentally resilient and be innovative, because there's going to be so many things thrown at them. And I reckon the club that can handle it the best in regards to, okay, don't get frustrated if something doesn't go right or something doesn't go to plan. Be open-minded, be innovative. And I think this year, more than any other, it won't go to script. I think now you can throw on its head that the four best teams will be Richmond, West Coast, the Giants and Collingwood. I think if clubs can actually really get a grasp on this season, they might be able to get a jump on the competition.
And if players and a team go into self-isolation, or the whole competition does, the interesting thing is how you then train. If you're in lockdown, you can only leave your house.
Mm.
If you can go to work, or you know, if you can't go there, do you train in your backyard? Who's got gyms? So all these factors that are going to arise and how clubs are going to deal with it is going to be the interesting thing. And as Joey said, the team that adapts the best, it may not be the top four favourites as we think.
There's a few people banding around the term asterisk for this season. Yeah. So if you win a Brownlow or if you are the Premiers this year, there's an asterisk. I can't buy into that, Joey, because this is, everybody's in the same boat. Everybody has to be flexible. Everybody has to be adaptable. All of a sudden, is it the survival of the fittest? Is it the best team just for those 17 games? I don't think there's an asterisk. I think this is a huge challenge, one we've never seen before. And to be crowned the Premiers at the end of this year is an amazing effort.
I think it would only be an asterisk if this season was 17 games and it was played midweek. And then we went back to 22 games, back to, you know, playing on the weekends. But I can see off the back of this season, the competition potentially changing forever, Baz. Yep. I can see maybe quarters change, the length of seasons change, list structures, how they go about it. This could potentially open up just a whole nother way of playing AFL football to how it's been played, probably since it became a national competition in the late 80s, the 90s. It could change forever. So while it might be an asterisk this season, in 20 years' time when we do play, who knows, 34 games in a year or 17 games in a season, we'll say, well, no, that was just when it first started, rather than, you know, that was just a one out of the box. So there's so many things that we've got to be open-minded to, Baz, that this is just the beginning of it, and we don't know where it's going to end up.
Fascinating build-up to round one as always, Daze, but this time in the last few weeks, that's got a massive curve on what's happened, obviously. You're just out of the game and no doubt in touch with a few of the boys. Without naming names, what's the headspace of the players like at the moment?
In club land, the old phrase, control what you can control. So they would have just gone about their preparation as if they expected to play tonight, which thankfully both teams are here and we are seeing a game of footy. A lot of the noise and outside, you know, does that play into it at some point? It probably does, because you can't escape it. You turn on the telly, there's headlines everywhere. You read the paper, it's the first 10 pages. So again, the team who has adapted best and prepared the best mentally tonight, as you know, everyone's going to be in the same boat physically. The team who's prepared the best mentally tonight, I think, you know, it'll show up early on in the game, and hopefully it's a good spectacle.
Well, Baz, to give an insight, I spoke to someone from a club today in the fitness department, and he was telling me during the week, in the last few days, he would have had 20-odd players call him, and about 50 text messages just continually saying, where are we at? Do we know the latest? What's happening? What are we doing here? What's training like tomorrow? So no doubt the players have been like the rest of us, not sure, and have been trying to find out as much as they can. But as Daisy said, in the back of their mind, they have to prepare like they're playing a game of football. It's been a unique situation, but I think the best place for them, Daisy, as you know, is now they're here in the rooms, out on the ground, they'll just do what they've always done.
And people talking about questioning motivation. How do the players get motivated? How do they play without the crowd? You can't tell me that Dustin Martin stands in the middle or Sam Petrescu-Seaton goes in the middle. He's standing next to Dustin Martin, who has won the last two of the last three Norm Smith medals. How he's not going to be inspired to beat Dustin Martin, even though there's not 90,000 people there. I can't get my head around people thinking that the players aren't going to be motivated because there's no crowd there.
Yeah, and I touched on walking out the race and feeling that buzz, but that wears off after 5 minutes max. So at the end of the day, you're out there to do your job. Your job is to play football. Everyone's either playing, you know, for a spot, their career, or trying to for self-pride. You talk about a Dustin Martin. He's got a reputation to uphold. He wants the best for his footy club and the best for himself. And those blokes, you know, it's their job.
There are a few players out there, though, that love the crowd and they love going to the crowd. I think Jack Riewoldt's going to miss the crowd the most tonight. He is one player that genuinely kicks a goal and always goes to the crowd. It's a bit of a look-at-me moment for Jack.
Yes, it is. For Bob Jane T-Marts for the first time tonight, Bob Jane T-Marts, of course, get 20% off Bridgestone and J-Trax tyres, bobjane.com.au. Sarah Olley, Triple M and Fox Footy Zone, I reckon you've got the most fascinating job of all tonight on the boundary line, and added to that, a little bit of rain. Good evening.
Good evening. Just me, a few colleagues and some seagulls. I'm getting some Sheffield Shield vibes mid-November. That's the only analogy I can really draw to this, but it's very bizarre, and as Joey said before, a real privilege to be here to cover the game tonight.
And both sides know changes, but some interesting debutants tonight.
For tonight, we do have two new Blues, and they are Jack Nunes and Jack Martin, the pair of Jacks, and they were handed their jumpers before in the rooms. Of course, their families couldn't be there, and we saw with the AFLW during the week, they actually had some Skypes set up for families. I'm not sure if that was there, but it was Cade Simpson who handed Jack Nunes his jumper and Liam Jones who handed Jack Martin his jumper. So two new Blues set to run out and two Jacks.
And for those that don't, obviously we see you next to the coaches' benches down there.
Yes.
You're going to be hearing things tonight that you would not normally hear.
I know. Do I repeat them?
Absolutely.
Yes, you do. Pass it on.
Absolutely. Word for word. Perhaps not word for word.
It is going to be interesting, though, as well. And I think Damien Hardwick was saying during the week on AFL 360, he would even flirt with the idea of coaching down from the bench, as we have seen with AFLW, because your voice is more powerful down there. He might be able to get messages out in a more direct fashion. So I'll keep my eye out to see if the coaches come down there as well.
A couple of big ones for Carlton, isn't it? I mean, Jack Nunes from St Kilda, but Jack Martin, I mean, he's one that, never went the first time and then, of course, in the draft and then came after that. But he eventually found his way to the Blues, and he's one of those blokes in the old days we used to say could be anything.
Yeah, he could be, and he still might be. The talent he's got and what he showed, he's had a lot of injuries when he played up there, and obviously getting out of that football club with another opportunity at Carlton. I think they've needed that run and carry through their midfield. They've been a bit stagnant through there. Paddy Cripps obviously shoulders a lot of that load, but you've got Sam Walsh running through there now, but Jack Martin will play a lot of time forward, I'd imagine, Daisy, but a player who've got elite hands for the size of the player he is above his head too.
He's got the X factor. He's what the Blues have been screaming out for. Someone who can kick three or four goals in a matter of 4 or 5 minutes. As you talk about, he's a hard matchup too. He's got the spring. He's good below his knees. Hopefully for the Blues and hopefully for him, tonight's the start of a really good what could be career for him, because the first bit's been a little bit stop-start.
Hopefully he runs through the middle a bit more. I mean, he's been a stay-at-home forward. And as you know, it can be a graveyard at times when you're playing that half-forward role. If you only have 13 or 14 disposals a game, you need to kick through to have a real impact. So if he can get through the midfield, Joey, and use his aerobic capacity and his pace and the way he uses the footy, that's going to be a big filler for the Blues.
Well, we know we're playing footy now, which is fantastic news. We love our great game. So let's talk a little bit of what we think is going to happen this year, our season's predictions. And we've had 24 hours to think about it, with the competition changed somewhat. But what are we all thinking in regards to who's going to get the job done now, in 2020?
I'm now thinking more and more about this season that it is going to be tipped on its head. I think we're going to see something random, something different that we didn't predict. I mean, we've all thought, as we said, the top four teams, we can all name them. We think Richmond and West Coast and the Giants will be up there. I just think now it's wide open. I think the Gold Coast Suns can be a really improved side. I don't think they'll win the Wooden Spoon. 17 rounds means the ladder is going to be much more compressed. So with two rounds to go, we could still have 14 teams that can potentially make the finals. The shortened quarters, what impact that's going to have for teams, the way they play, the style of footy. And as we said before, I think clubs that are the most innovative, that are creative, they can really find a competitive advantage this year and take advantage of the, you know, the complexities of this season. And I can just see it being something so different that we didn't expect.
Did you see the stats Swampy had during the week? If you had to stop the quarters at 16 and a half minutes last year, how the ladder looked. And I think the Bulldogs, who obviously played finals, finished 13th. If you stopped it at 16 and a half minutes. So that's the sort of change that you could be looking at this year.
And I certainly know from a Carlton perspective, the last 5 minutes of quarters were what really torched them last year. So they're bullish about what this 16 and a half minute quarters will do for them this season.
And on that Swampy ladder, Brownie, the Swans, they were actually in seventh position. So they could be a team that perhaps benefits, and they could maybe be a Brisbane of this year and perhaps skyrocket back up the ladder as well, Joey.
That's why Daisy's point's good. Young teams always, how often, Brownie, in time on of quarters, late in quarters, do you concede a couple of goals? The Gold Coast Suns did a lot. So you're not going to necessarily have that going on. You know, now the start's going to be more important than ever. The first 10 minutes of a quarter, yet you're not going to have the crowd and the energy to sort of lift. So does the coaching go back to almost a bit more of rant and rave and fire the players up and get their arousal levels a bit higher? The tactics and the coaching perspective, do more coaches go from the bench because they can get instructions out on the field? I just think there's so many different ways now that clubs can handle this season. I think it can be just tipped on its head.
Interesting to see how they do go with the limited preparation into the shortened quarters. So most teams will have a mode, or a green mode, or a go mode if they're behind or they need to make up or play a bit faster. It's whether they go into those situations or scenarios earlier in games to try and jump teams or get that head start.
All right, there's always changes throughout the AFL season from season, 2018 and 19 and now to 2020. Who do we think is going to jump up? I think Port Adelaide are going to be a pretty good side this year. Charlie Dixon missing in this round one, but I think a lot centres around him. Their young players are really good, and not just because you are at that footy club, Joey, but I've been impressed Fremantle's game style over the off-season, obviously with the new coach, Longmire. I think that Port Adelaide and Fremantle can be movers this year.
Yeah, not bad. I wonder about travel too this year. How much of a factor travel is going to be if teams are going to have to play three or four games in a shortened span. For me, and touching on what I thought before about being innovative and creative, I've got something that says Hawthorn could do it again. Clarko and his coaching staff will come up with something. Tom Mitchell's back in the side. Chad Wingard fully fit, playing as a midfielder. We know they've now got some key forwards with Johnny Patton and a couple of young emerging forwards. A bit more stability in the back line with Stratton and Frost back there and Frawley. I can see Hawthorn potentially finishing top four again.
So, Joey, do you think Victorian sides potentially will have an advantage because they might not have to travel as much? I mean, we don't know what's going to happen, but do you think that could be a factor?
Absolutely. I know St Kilda are quite bullish about the first 6 weeks of the year because they don't travel. Because of the China game, they don't travel for the first 5 or 6 weeks of the year. They've got a really strong, healthy list at the moment. So they're almost looking at it going, these first 6 weeks could be a real opportunity for us. Staying in Melbourne, a fit and healthy list, we're in good form. Let's go for it, because other teams have got injuries or got to travel, so I just think it can be completely different.
So for all these sides coming up, Dace, everyone's coming up, who's the big slider? Who's falling away in this scenario?
I promised myself when I got into this job I wasn't going to can anyone, so I'm not going to start tonight, so I'm going to keep it on the positive bandwagon. I think the big improver is going to be Melbourne. Obviously, their prelim and then slid down to 17th last season. There's no way that will happen again. And I think the fact that this preseason compared to last, they've been a lot quieter. There's been no noise coming out of that place. They've talked themselves down. I think they'll be one to watch.
Brownie, you're not afraid to pot teams then, so you can fill in for Daisy.
That's not going to last long.
Yeah, all right, come on, Daisy. You can't do that.
I can't do it on night one.
Who do you think's going to slide?
Well, I don't think the Bombers will play finals. They played finals last year. The other side I've got concerns about, only because of their preseason form, is Geelong. Hearing that they're probably not going to be as good as last year, but in saying that, they do play a lot of games at home, and we're talking about Melbourne teams having an advantage. Now, Geelong were 21 points up on Richmond at halftime in the preliminary final last year. Now, I'm saying they're going to be the slider. I'm going to back that up. I think Geelong slide out of that top eight, and I think Port Adelaide come in for me. What about you, Joey?
I agree with you. I think Geelong and Essendon will probably both miss it. Sorry, Baz.
A couple of players I'm really looking forward to seeing play this year. Andrew McGrath from the Bombers. I think he's going to take a quantum leap. And Bailey Smith from the Bulldogs. I think he is going to be an absolute jet.
All right, just the one player you think you're going to be very excited to watch this year. Starting with you, Sarah.
Two words, Jordan Dawson. He's a swan that jumped onto some people's radars last year, but I reckon he might redefine the radar this year. He's coming off his second really strong pre-season. The club are really bullish about him. He can go at both ends, and he's got a divine left boot that you just love watching all day. So Jordan Dawson for
Jordan
me is the
Dawson.
One.
Never heard of him, but he shouted like a gun. I didn't know half my own teammates' names last year, so read into that what you're on. For me, it's Zach Fisher. You'll get to see him tonight, boys.
He's I like him.
Spending a bit more time through the midfield. Silky left footer. 22 disposals he averaged through the Marsh series. Goes at 74%. In through there, a bit of clearance work. He's dynamic. He's only small.
But he found the weight room yet?
He hasn't found the weight room, but he doesn't need it. He's smart enough to get in and out of traffic, and his use going inside forward 50 is exactly what the Blues need.
I think Sydney Stack could be anything. I can't wait to watch Sydney Stack this season play a full year.
Well, I already said mine, Andrew McGrath and Bailey Smith, Baz.
Good on you, Brownie. Coach Sire. This man. For Red Z Lending, ladies and gentlemen, he is an institution here on Triple M Footy, two-time day, two-time night premiership statistician. Good evening, Ashley Chua.
Good evening, Baz. Great to be here for season 2020 during these unpredictable times, of course.
A couple of zingers off the top from you, Ash, please.
Well, Tigers, a very good record against the Blues. They've won the past nine. In fact, they've won the past six round one openers against Carlton. But yeah, this is a concern, I reckon, for the Blues, Baz and Brown, is their scoring capacity. Look, under Teague, in his first four games, the Blues cracked more than 100 points twice. However, since round 15, they were ranked 15th in attack, only averaging 73 points per game. You look at their pre-season form in the Marsh Community Series, only averaging 55. And take out Harry Mackay and Charlie Curnow.
Oh.
Intriguing. Whereas the Tigers, from round 15 onwards, they were number one in defence, only conceding 60 points per game, the least in the competition.
And length of quarters here tonight, Ash.
Yeah, 16 minutes plus time on. Joe and I were talking off air. We reckon it'll probably go in at about 23, 24 minutes. The quarters all up.
I'll give you a red dead lending stat, Ash.
Yep.
If you think it's going to be close tonight, the last 13 times they've played, only one of those times has been over 40 plus.
Is that right?
So
that
Carlton have always been close to Richmond. It's only been one blowout. And you'd think with a little bit of rain tonight and shortened quarters, maybe it's around that 1 to 39 again.
All right, that's for Coach Sire, the Triple M preview. Whatever you need, of course, Coach Sire can make it happen. Search Coach Sire. Today, Daisy and Joey, you, for different reasons, have both played at the MCG at an empty stadium. Give us a bit of a perception of what that's like.
Yeah, well, actually, St Kilda in 2010, we played a pre-season game at Marvel Stadium back then, Etihad Stadium, where no crowd was allowed in because there was really solid storms and there was a bit of a hole in the roof at Marvel at the time. So they didn't let any crowd in. So we played a game without any crowd, and it was certainly eerie. It was quite echoey out on the ground. And the other thing that we noticed, the depth perception was a little bit difficult to judge the flight of the football. Now, that might sound strange to some people listening in at home or in the cars, but because with a grandstand and you're not used to it with having no people in it, kicking the football, we were overshooting the targets. We were kicking it a bit too far at the start. Took a while to get used to. And Daisy, I know we've both trained at the MCG when it's been empty before finals. It is quite difficult early to try and judge how far to kick the football and getting the flight in the air.
Yeah, and it does sound bizarre, but you're 100% right. For whatever reason it is, you either overshoot it or undershoot it to the person you're kicking it to, and the ground seems so much bigger. When you're at one end to the other, when there's no crowd involved, it seems like it could take an eternity to get to the other end. Another interesting little point that I've got for you here, Joey. Bit of wet weather tonight. The grippo that the Tigs use is unbelievable. Completely different to any other team in the comp.
Well, that's a
is
very
it
good
a better
point.
Grippo, is it? I didn't know there was different brands.
I actually stand by this. Round 21 last year, we played in the wet. Our boys had it started raining. We had grippo. We couldn't control the footy. Went near one of their boys, touched the ball after him, and it was like
something, because, Brownie, we have said for a number of years, Richmond are by far the best wet weather team
clearly
in the competition. Maybe we've worked out the answer.
Well, I'll tell you what, Paddy Cripps was so intrigued by it, he actually rang a few of the Richmond boys and chased them up.
Well, Dusty Martin must use it because he, I think, is the best wet weather player in the competition. He does not fumble. He's so clean and creative in these conditions. So looking forward to seeing that again. And just one other point I want to make, Baz, I want to put it on the record.
Yes.
Without the crowds this year, I have a theory, goal-kicking accuracy will be at a 20-year high this year.
Ooh.
I think with no crowd, players will feel more comfortable, a little bit more relaxed having shots for goal, because I know when I was out in the field, and Daisy be the same, 30 out, 40 out, when you feel you should kick the goal, you do feel a little bit of internal pressure. Just puts you off. I think, Brownie, this will be the most accurate season we've had in years.
We'll look forward to that, Joey.
All right, for Bob Jane T-Marts, let's go to the boundary line. Bob Jane T-Marts, of course, get 20% off Bridgestone and J-Trax Tyres, bobjane.com.au. Sarah, Ollie, we can hear the music around the ground. Give us the atmosphere down there.
Yeah, that's all we can pretty much hear is that music that is still blaring at the moment. But, yeah, it is eerie down here. It is very strange. There's only a handful of people down here at the moment. Steve Hocking's about to walk past me, but I don't even think Gillon McLaughlin is staying for the match today. So strange feelings down here, and it's still quite warm, 28.5 degrees at the moment. And I'll give you the starting benches for this evening, fellas. We've got Cade Simpson, Michael Gibbons, Zach Fisher and Will Setterfield for the Blues. For the Tigers, it's Toby Nankervis, Daniel Rioli, Sydney Stack and Marlon Pickett. And I'll tell you what, Marlon Pickett, pretty different running out tonight in front of a few reporters and a few seagulls. The last time he did so, it was in front of 100,014 people.
Yeah, amazing. Thanks, Sarah. And Triple M rocking the MCG with a gang of views there. Great Triple M track, that one. Don't worry about that. That is incredible for Marlon Pickett, isn't it, to be...
It's amazing. It's an amazing story, and it just continues to get more unique and surreal. But I'm fascinated to see his season this year. Coming out of the Richmond camp, they think that this year he can be like Tim Kelly. They just expect him to be an elite midfielder from round one. And I wonder, though, if that means Dustin Martin spends a little bit more time forward. We know how dangerous he is forward with Trent Cotchin and Jack Graham in the side, Prestia, Shane Edwards. Does Dustin Martin play maybe 60, 70% as a forward? And Brownie, I don't know what it is to win the Coleman, but I think he could kick 60 goals this year, Dusty Martin, if he plays forward. And Marlon Pickett, Daisy, they think he could be Tim Kelly and have an outstanding season.
Yeah, when your captain comes out and says that he makes the game look easy, that's a fair compliment. So interesting to see. And what a proposition to have, or what a problem to have, is to figure out where to put Dustin Martin, the best player in the competition, not sure whether to put him forward to kick your goals or have 100 of it through the midfield.
We've spoken about Cripps, and we know that Sam Walsh is going to be a good player. You've spoken about Zach Fisher. For Carlton this year, if one player stands up, if you're going to hang your hat on one player outside Patrick Cripps, who's enormous, in your eyes being there, who's a player that needs to stand up for Carlton this year?
Well, to be completely honest, I think there's probably three or four of them that need to. You look at your Sam Petreski, Seaton, Zach Fisher, who I touched on, Paddy Dow, who could be anything, one of those players, got unbelievable sidestep, came in, was touted as a great kick and probably hasn't kicked it that well thus far throughout his career. And David Cunningham as well, another one who's absolutely electric, got amazing pace, amazing skills, just need that consistency and to really fight for their spot and have that little bit of pressure of performance.
And why they have to, Brownie, is you look at the top 10 in the BNF last year, there were five of the guys were over 29 or 30 years old. Murphy, Simpson, Ed Curno, Liam Jones, who's getting towards 30. So we need some more youngsters for the Blues to really step up.
Shut up! The footy's on Triple M!
Triple M rocks footy.